introduce Valentina Torini.
Yes.
So I looked at her website to see her curriculum, and then I found out that her first degree is not in physics, it's in piano.
Yeah.
So this is very beautiful. So she got that in Perugia, where she subsequently also got her physics degree. Yeah. And then she proceeded to do her PhD in
it's better.
Physics. Then came back to Perugia for a postdoc, another postdoc in Berlin. Then she was Alexander von Humboldt Fellow at the Albert Einstein Institute in Potsdam. Then she moved to Barcelona, then to Humboldt University of Berlin, so like a lot of variety. And then she was an Einstein Junior Fellow. This sounds really, really good. And from
yeah, and for
Valentina Einstein Junior. Then since 2018, she is a lecturer in the UK at the City University of London.
Very good. Thank you very much. So it's a real pleasure to be here again. I was here in August, and I'm back just for 3 or 4 days, but it's a special occasion, so I was very happy to arrange. Unfortunately, I could not be here for the first 2 days of the meeting because of lectures. But yeah, so I think I will not address fundamental questions on the structure of quantum space-time, as I would like, it would be the theme of this workshop. However, I will, in the framework of the ADS-EFT correspondence, which addresses together two outstanding problems of modern theoretical physics, I will say something about this. So the two outstanding problems are, as we know, understanding gauge theories at all values of the coupling, and string theories in non-trivial backgrounds. And I will be dealing with a paradigmatic example of ADS-CFT, which is the duality between a four-dimensional supersymmetric Young-Mills theory with gauge group SUN and a certain type of superstrings propagating, so this is the string worksheet, cylindric one, that could be also open strings, but we look at we actually look at open strings in propagating in this ADS5 cross S5 background, so the tensor product of anti de Sitter in five dimensions and five dimensional sphere. And the paradigmatic example of calculation in ADS-CFT is what is depicted here. It's the evaluation of the quark anti-quark potential via ADS-CFT. So there are no quarks, but there are fermions in the fundamental that one can build. What one does in QFT, in QCD, for example, is to evaluate the path exponential of a certain holonomy of a connection, evaluated on this rectangular contour. One does the same in the supersymmetric case, so just the connection is a generalization. And via string theory, this is the amazing thing. One can actually calculate something completely different. So the idea is that the string partition function of the string, so weighted by the string action, and with certain boundary condition, which ensure that the string is lying at the boundary of the ADS space, which is where the four-dimensional field theory lives. One can evaluate this quark anti-quark potential, and here you see depicted just the saddle point approximation of this path integral, which means the classical action, and since the string action is a minimal area action, it's an area action, this is a minimal area. So what I'm saying is that ADS-CFT tells you that you can calculate the strong coupling behavior of the quark anti-quark potential, something that we do not have access if not by numerical means, via something analytical and actually very mathematically, beautifully mathematically, which is a minimal area. And of course, one can go much beyond this saddle point approximation, which is what I want to do. And in fact, there are beautiful results in the recent times in ADS-CFT, exact results in the coupling, fulfilling what is the dream of, I would say, every theoretical physicist. So having a function f of the coupling g, in our case, through all the talk, this g is the unique coupling that one has when one considers the so-called planar limit of the gauge theory, which on the string theory side means that we have to do with free strings, So non-interacting strings. There are very much interactions here, but they are only due to the curvature of the background. So the only coupling is G, which is either the Toft coupling in terms of the Jahn-Mills coupling and the rank of the gauge group, or in terms of the radius of the two manifolds we are considering here, and alpha prime, the Regge slope. So there are beautiful examples of functions of the coupling, which are known to all couplings. So not only in the regimes which are naturally under control, in this context, which are perturbative gauge theory, which is a power expansion in the lambda powers, the Toft coupling powers, or also natural is the perturbative string sigma model analysis. So this is an expansion in inverse powers of the string tension, which is this object G, which actually square root of lambda appearing in front of the string action. And the first would be the minimal surface I was talking about, so the standard point approximation, but one can evaluate, of course, correction to this semi-classical expansion. And the way we know these beautiful lines here are, in this context, basically two. They are integrability and supersymmetric localization. And by integrability, I mean the existence of an infinite. There are many definitions of integrability. In this context, we can see it like the existence of an infinite number of conserved charges. And supersymmetric localization is a beautiful mathematical tool that one can use in supersymmetric gauge theories and that allow you to calculate the infinite dimensional path integral, to reduce it in a finite dimensional integral, and for which the approximation semi-classical, the quadratic approximation is exact. So these methods are the way we can cover this finite coupling region. And however, there are caveats. So integrability is an assumption. So it's something that you have to assume to do calculations in this region. In particular, from the point of view of string sigma model, it's really a strong assumption because there is evidence only at the classical level and maybe at one loop order in this sigma model perturbation theory. Supersymmetric localization is only working on the gauge theory side. And of course, it's only working for supersymmetric observables. So with this caveat, one can say that there are no, in principle, first principle methods to analyze this finite coupling region. And one has also to say that the relevant string sigma model, which for us it's a Green-Schwarz superstring, I will comment in a second, in ADS backgrounds with Ramond-Ramond fluxes, well, this remains a complicated interacting, it's a string theory, but we can think about it like a two-dimensional field theory, which has very many subtleties also at the perturbative level. So it remains a complicated model. And one question, which I believe it's interesting, is what can genuine QFT say about this model in this finite coupling region? So what I'm saying is that can we get rid of all the assumptions, including the ADS-CFT correspondence, to say something at finite coupling? And this is a question which is in the realm of, let me point out that the aim, so I'm talking about models which are solvable exactly via beautiful methods. Of course, the idea and the underlying motivation of all what I'm saying is that this kind of study I'm going to explore with you today, it's a benchmark study, and it would be our aim, me and my collaborators, to go much beyond exactly solvable backgrounds, because if you want to say something which is a priori, which is valid a priori about other models, you would have only this mean. So it would be nice to develop a tool to study this finite coupling region, and the natural tool, it's lattice techniques. So discretizing the worksheet and using Monte Carlo methods for it. So I'm summarizing already. This is the use of lattice field theory method in ADS-CFT is a consolidated program already on the gauge theory side. There is a number of people working on it already for some years, more than 10, I would say. There are very nice results. So one of them is a postdoc here at Perimeter right now. Probably today I want to emphasize the weak points of this analysis. You will forgive me. And the weak point is that there are many difficulties inherent to the fact that the supersymmetry on the lattice is immediately broken. Of course, also Poincaré symmetry is immediately broken on the lattice, but the way supersymmetry is broken is worse, so to say. So it's much more difficult to restore it. And that's why this experiment of putting the superstring worksheet on the lattice is appealing, because it has some features which make it appealing. First of all, one is in two dimensions, which is a computationally cheaper setup. There is no supersymmetry, and here I should clarify that supersymmetry is there, but in the target space. So we are dealing with the Green-Schwarz formulation of superstring theory, which means supersymmetry is in the target space and not on the two-dimensional worksheet that we discretize. And so supersymmetry is more like a flavor symmetry in this context. Also very crucial to say that the difference, it will be at least in this first analysis that we do, that we gauge fix all symmetries local. So if you have in mind the lattice QCD and the Wilson formulation of lattice QCD, their gauge invariance is should be maintained. It's one of the things that then brings people to define plaquette variable, link variables. Well, we are talking about something different here. We gauge fix everything, and in fact, we don't even have fermions to deal with. We have fermions in the sense of scalar anti-commuting variables. So this is a feature which I have to emphasize. Also, I should emphasize that if you were listening to the first talk, unfortunately I couldn't, of this week, so the talk by Renate Loll, well, that's a discrete approach to the study of quantum gravity. It has nothing to do with what we do here, because you see, we are actually gauge fixing the highlight of string theory, which is the Diffie-Hellman invariance. So in a sense, you could even say you are not really doing string theory, because again, we are gauge fixing this diffeos. However, of course, we should retain all the information that string theory has in this model. It's a specific model that we analyze, but very, very rich and important. And so we think that this is an interesting thing to do. And not to say that this is a non-trivial two-dimensional QFT, which has a strong coupling. So now you should put yourself from the point of view of string theory and think that the strong coupling of this sigma model is weakly coupled perturbative Young-Mills, for which we have analytic results. And so we have a way to say, also to lattice field theoreticians, look, we have a model, highly non-trivial, for which we can go to strong coupling, but there we have exact predictions. Okay, so, and also exact finite coupling predictions, which are the ones to which we will compare. Okay, so but first I should say a few words about the model in perturbation theory, which I've studied a little bit in the past. So, Green-Schwarz string in the ADS5 cross S5 backgrounds. Well, this is with Ramond-Ramond fluxes. This is a certain potential, which are there to ensure that this is a solution of the supergravity equations. The symmetries of this model are the superconformal symmetry in four dimensions. So this is the PSU2,2/4 group. And these are global symmetries. Then there are local symmetries initially, like bosonic diffeos, and also a fermionic symmetry, which is called the kappa symmetry. And there is also a non-manifest hidden symmetry, which is integrability. All these symmetries are manifest when you write the sigma model action as a nonlinear sigma model on this super coset. However, today we look at the explicit expansion. Yes.
Should we ask questions?
Yes.
Can you explain why you view the classical integrability as a symmetry?
Because I view symmetry as the existence of conserved charges, very simply. Okay, so that's how, yeah. Emitter, exactly. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful, thanks. Yeah, by the way, emitter is also important to me, because when I was at Humboldt, I had a five-year grant by called emitter, so I should thank emitter twice, I think. Okay, so we see, so we have to deal with an action which is of this kind. This is very well known Polyakov formulation of bosonic string. And then there are fermions additionally. So in fact, you can go up to 32 fermions, which is the number of fermions in 10 dimensions where we are complex fermions. So you see it's a highly nonlinear action. To quantize it, one has to use a semi-classical method, typically. So expanding around the classical solution. And also to give a meaning to what is the, in principle, Yukawa term. So it's a quadratic in the fermions, but it's cubic in the fields. And if you expand around a classical solution, you can give a meaning of this like a fermionic kinetic term. What happens, however, is that the derivative of the bosonic backgrounds, this also happens in flat space, actually. You don't need to go to this 5 process 5. So this derivative introduces a scale in the game, and this scale, this dimensional scale, gives you formal power counting non-renormalizability of the model, which means basically you find a lot of divergences beyond one loop, and you have always to find a good regulator. And all the talk, if you want, is about how to regulate this, this model. So one proceeds using semi-classical methods. So this is the expansion in the powers, in inverse powers of the string tension. So sorry for the many words, but this is just to, a way to summarize some many papers which we wrote on the perturbative analysis. So this leading is classical strings, minimal surfaces. There is beautiful mathematics about it, but today I'm not talking about this. At one loop, you can be very general if you want to write down the fluctuation spectrum, so the quadratic fluctuation, which is this one loop, in terms of background geometry, so extrinsic, intrinsic curvature. This is a chapter of a well-known analysis of sigma model. And yeah, however, when you want to do physics, so you want to have numbers, basically, you can do that only if you reduce yourself to study a class of effectively one-dimensional problems. So there are several vacua that in our community are known, like Glebanov, Klebanov, Polyakov, Gabser, Klebanov, Polyakov strings, and other kind of classical solutions, which put into this machinery of functional determinants, actually, can be solved. Because the operator, the fluctuations operator, are quite non-trivial, but if you also talk to mathematicians, you can sort of try to solve these problems that sometimes are very non-trivial. In particular, 10 years occurred to solve, to predict, to match the prediction from field theory, from supersymmetric localization in the case of the circular Wiersel loop, with the sigma model perturbation theory. And this had to do with measure ambiguities and with the suitable regularization schemes. Another few words about the two loop, which is the current limit of the perturbative analysis. Again, you have to restrict yourself to an even smaller class of configurations. There are basically two papers on this. And what you notice is that, okay, you have to choose a particular a gauge fixing also the action where the Feynman diagrammatics is smooth. And then you notice a lot of divergences. Typically, one cuts out all the power divergences. So this is what is called the dimensional regularization scheme. And this way, one can say very crucial things about tests of a proposal via integrability or a supersymmetric localization. And in fact, there is also a way to bypass completely Feynman diagrammatics. This is the use of so-called unitarity on shell methods. There is a lot of work going on here, which was done in the past, very relevant work at perimeter. And this is an alternative to Feynman diagrammatics, which uses these unitarity methods, which are extremely efficient in the context of gauge field theories, also in the two-dimensional case. But this is only really for on-shell objects, which are worksheet amplitudes, which has nothing to do with string theory amplitudes. These are the building blocks of a worksheet as matrix, which is one of the fundamental objects in the integrability setup analysis of this background, of this model. Okay, now I want to go to this experiment, which is more like a program of going beyond perturbation theory. Of all the collaborators, the only expert in lattice field theory method is Björn Leda, who's now director of our computing center at Humboldt. This is, so I'm at City University of London, but I continue the collaboration on this with the people at Humboldt. So the first thing I said, we want to establish a benchmark study. So we look at something which is a crucial observable in this context, for which we know basically everything, even the whole loop curve. And this is the so-called cusp anomaly of N equal 4 super Jan Mills. It's an observable which appears everywhere, but in particular, it governs the renormalization of a certain light like Wilson loops with a cusp. It governs the infrared structure of gluon scattering amplitudes. And also, it appears in the large X behavior of the anomalous dimensions for so-called twist operators, which are the ones which appear in the OP analysis of deep inelastic scattering. And today, we see it as in its string theory version. So as I said, it's this function f of g, which is multiplying some divergences, linear and logarithmic, and it governs the renormalization of a cusp light like Wilson loop. In fact, this is a Euclidean space. The loop is closed at infinity. This blue is the minimal surface of the string, which is attached, which ends at the boundary of ADS on this loop. And this angle here, it's a geometric angle. However, when you take the large imaginary limit, so you take this this small phi to be infinity, what you get is this behavior. It's a very crucial observable, I would say. So from the point of view of string theory, we said we look at the string partition function, and we want to analyze it in this background, which I call X cusp, summing over all the fluctuations. And so basically, what one does normally, so this X cusp is the minimal surface, which is expressed in terms of the string coordinates. And this is the Poincaré metric for ADS 5. And well, it's a reasonable ansatz, which tells you that, yes, indeed, I'm falling on the light-like X plus and X minus lines on the boundary of the DS, because all this is consistent with this hypothesis. And you can do calculations. You can calculate this cusp anomaly perturbatively at weak coupling. This is the power series in G, at, in weakly coupled N equal 4 super Jan Mills. And this is the string sigma model perturbation theory, analytical calculations. What you look at is the coefficients of the divergences which in both models appear. And however, partition functions are something that lattice QFT people do not like, because they are not VEVs. So typically, one wants to measure a VEV of some operator. And the way we do this is to take the VEV of the action, because since the action is defined via, so this VEV is defined by taking the logarithmic derivative of the partition function. And since the f appears here, what we will get at the end, if we consider this VEV, is the derivative of this observable, which is still something interesting. So I have to show you this action also to show you how difficult, in particular, if you were lattice QFT people, you would think that this model is crazy, because this is the action once gauge fixed of the fluctuations, so the action which governs all the fluctuations about this classical solution. And what I highlight is the quartic fermionic terms, so eta are the fermions. There are two names for the fermions, theta and eta, but let me summarize by saying that we have in this model 8 bosons and 8 fermions. You have to think that we are in a light cone gauge fixing and we are in 10-dimensional space. The coordinate, I recall it, of the string are our fields in this model. So we have 10 minus 2, which are the light cone, 8. Both from the bosonic point of view and the fermionic point of view, there are also some rho appearing here and there, which are Dirac matrices in SO6. And SO6 times SO2 is the remnant global symmetries of this model, remnant with respect to PSU2,2/4, so the superconformal group that I mentioned at the beginning. And so it's a non-trivial action. There are fields appearing at the denominator. So if you want to study perturbatively, you have to do some rescaling. But this is the action that we have to deal at the beginning. And the aim is to analyze it via lattice QFT techniques. And I should recall to set up also the notation that what we do is a discretization of the Euclidean worksheet with a square lattice. So we have really this square, and we have a lattice spacing A, sides L, N is the number of the sides, so it's not the number, the rank of the Gray group from now on. We are in the planar limit, so if you see N, don't be confused, this is just the number of sides. Fields are all defined to live at the sides, and as we know from our QFT studies in the university, this lattice spacing gives a natural cutoff to the momenta, which all lie in the first Brillouin zone. Also, we have the chance to define a multidimensional path integral by a finite dimensional integral. And then when we consider the integral weighted by the discretized action, what we have is the statistical system, in this case of n square degrees of freedom, that we can study via Monte Carlo methods, which means we can generate an ensemble of field configuration, each of which is weighted by a certain Boltzmann weight. And then when we calculate VEVs, what we do is to consider the ensemble average. And this is the Monte Carlo theorem. And you see that because the error to this theorem is a 1 over square root of the number of configurations, k. This means that 2 dimensions is better than 1 because we have a smaller error with less effort. Now, when we have fermions, we can't feed the computer with the Grassmann odd variables. So what happens, and what happened in the past, is that fermions are simply disregarded. So you basically forget about them. This is the so-called quench approximation. Or, in our case, we can't, because we have this effective supersymmetry in the game. I mean, fermions should be there. And so typically what one does is to integrate them out formally, which means one takes the determinant of them and put this determinant in the Boltzmann weight. Now, to do this, first of all, the action should be quadratic in fermions, otherwise you can't integrate fermions as a determinant. And this means that one has to introduce auxiliary fields, which we do in our case. We have quartic interaction, and we have to introduce auxiliary fields. And plus, the determinant should be a positive definite quantity to be interpreted as a probability. And this means that one actually starts with something which is not positive definite, and uses a positive definite quantity, which, this is the trick, re-exponentiate in terms of so-called pseudo-fermions. These are complex scalars. And basically, this is what one does treating fermions and putting this as a weight in the Boltzmann weight. And this inversion here is the trickiest point of every simulation. You are inverting a highly non-local operator. You can imagine there are tricky things to do. So obviously, well, we have to do with the Pfaffian. Obviously, this is very dirty from the mathematical point of view, even. You are forgetting about complex phases, possible anomalies. So I will comment about this. First step is the linearization, which means just the introduction of auxiliary fields. So this is a Gaussian integral. If you go reversed, this is the starting point, and this is the new Lagrangian. A naive linearization, so by linearization I mean to write the action in terms of fermions which are just quadratic. A naive way of proceeding will be bad. We'll see. It gives you a Lagrangian which is not Hermitian. And I want just to emphasize this. This is totally expected because we have, if you see this exponential here, it's a Gaussian, it's an exponential of minus something positive. And we know that Gaussian integration tells us that here this will produce, if B is real, something with an imaginary constant. And we have the same situation. We have a bilinear in fermions, which is Hermitian. And you have a sign here. This is a common situation in several models. And we have to deal with this. I will comment in a second. So basically, we have a non-Hermitian Lagrangian if we proceed naively. So what we do is to put on the lattice the result of this linearization, which means that now I have just quadratic fermions. I have to redefine in an ensemble this all the fermionic content. And this is the new Lagrangian, and this is the fermionic quadratic operator, whose determinant or Pfaffian is used in the ensemble weight. And then, so it's a non-trivial operator, which, by the way, is also whose Pfaffian is complex. Okay, so it has a phase, precisely because this linearization naively would give you this complex phase. And however, one can treat this case, so again, on the measure, on the Boltzmann weight, one has to have a positive definite quantity. The way to proceed in these cases is the so-called reweighting. Here I'm just rewriting the VEV of a generic field in this way. So I integrate fermions, and this Pfaffian has a complex phase, but I retain this complex phase downstairs, and I re-exponentiate all the rest. So that at the end, I do simulation with something which is positive definite, and the phase remains here. And the only problem is that I have to check that this exponential here, this phase, does not average to zero. Because not only I have it at the denominator, but I also have it at the numerator with potential problems of high oscillations, which is our case. So we have what is called a sign problem. So you see here, these histograms just show that this phase is highly oscillating, is averaging to zero when G is small. Remember that G is 1 over G is our coupling. So this is where our sigma model is strongly coupled. And so we have a sign problem, a strong coupling. And this is, in principle, phaseable in a positive with a positive attitude, like the one that says, okay, we have an active field of study here, the sign problem. There is no general proof of convergence, at least not in models that are so complicated at the same time also exactly solvable. We could use this to get some information on the sign problem. But it's nice also to see that there is at least a first step that we can do analytically. And it's a nice observation of Simon Catterall in the context of another much simpler, unfortunately, problem. For him, it's possible to solve the sign problem completely, but for us, partially, which means the following. So if you take this SO4 invariant four fermions interaction, we have not SO4 invariant, we have not this simple structure, but we have something similar. Anyway, take this simple structure and rewrite it using some fermionic anti-commutic bilinears and their Hodge dual. Basically, if you introduce some self-dual and anti-self-dual combination, the outcome is that you can rewrite this initial Lagrangian with a plus or with a minus. So it's like you have the freedom. It's not something ambiguous. It's just that if you can rewrite it in terms of a self-dual or anti-self-dual, and then you can choose the sign. And why this is interesting? Because we had a problem with the sign of the quartic interaction, and now it looks like we can change it. So here I just show that this is true, that you can go back from here to the original Lagrangian, because this is just due to the Grassmann nature of the fermions. And the interesting thing is that we can do the same with a much more complex model, but we have still an epsilon tensor to deal with because we have a certain Clifford algebra for our fermions, for our Dirac matrices. So we can do something very similar. We can choose the sign, and we can at least get rid of the complex phase, which means that we are, via this procedure, we end up with a fermionic operator, which is a gamma phi Hermitian. I don't know if you ever heard it, but it's like something which is common in lattice QCD. And it's this relation here. And also antisymmetry. So these are two properties which ensure that the determinant, or actually the Pfaffian, is definite positive. And so it's real. So we got rid of the phase. In simpler model, you can get rid of the sign. We only get rid of the phase, which means that we have still plus or minus. This can be seen nicely because, well, one of the positive features of doing some lattice analysis is that you have to do with finite dimensional matrices for your operator. So your eigenvalues you can calculate exactly, you can see them, you can plot them. So this is the feature, gamma phi vermeticity and antisymmetry, which in principle would tell you that you have the spectrum of the operator characterizing quartets of this kind. So the determinant is possible to write like the product of eigenvalues in this way. And the Pfaffian has a plus or a minus, but in principle, you could start with a configuration which is positive, and then just follow the flow of this configuration. You could end up in a situation in which you don't have sign flips. In fact, unfortunately, we don't have these problems. We don't have this facilitation because we have also purely imaginary or purely real eigenvalues for which this property is empty, because I cannot write them anymore as quartets. So the pattern may change sign. The positive thing is, however, again, all this is like expertise that we borrow from lattice QCD, where they do study the lowest eigenvalue of the operator. So the sign problem occurs only if there is at least one eigenvalue which changes signs, becomes from positive negative, so it has to cross zero. But if you have a region of the parameter space in which you are far enough from zero, then you can say, okay, at least in this region, I'm safe. This is what happens to us. And nicely, this region of the parameter space includes, as I will mention, non-perturbative physics. So the main message is that there is a sign problem, which is quite strong. However, we may be dealing with this. So, few words about the discretization. When we discretize, we have guiding principles, which are that lattice perturbation theory, so Feynman diagrammatics in this model discretized, should lead in the continuum limit when the lattice space goes to zero to the continuum perturbation theory. We should preserve the symmetries of the model, also very crucial, and also previous experience tells us that we don't want to discretize and introduce complex phases. So basically, we have constraints on the discretization. And lattice perturbation theory can be done by, so this is actually continuum. This is just to recall how we do continuum perturbation theory. We have, before discretizing, we would take the determinant of the fermionic operator, put it in the denominator of our partition function, and then evaluate this path integral, which would give us a certain number, which is our guidance. So this is in the continuum, but we can reproduce this number in the discretized setting if we are careful enough and we get rid of the fermion doublers, which are additional non-physical degrees of freedom which always come into play if you are naive in discretizing. We are not naive. We introduce a Wilson term. So this is really like mimicking what is done in lattice QCD again. So an irrelevant term that we add to the action so that in the continuum limit, these non-physical degrees of freedom just decouple because they get a large mass. So this partition function, it's a modification of the fermionic operator, this W like Wilson. And then we get impact with the lattice perturbation theory, this number. So we are happy, we go ahead. And let me show you in the last part our measures, because this is like a theoretical lab where you do measures. So one, what we start with are two bare parameters in the action. I forgot to say that when we do analytic calculation in string theory handbooks, even the first page, we fix light con gauge, we have the P plus into the game, and we forget about it. We say, okay, we can always reinstall it looking at dimensional analysis. But here you have to keep it because every dimension full parameter is subject to renormalization. So we just change in the name. We call it, it's a dimension of a mass, and we call it small m. And so we have two bare parameters at the beginning, which are the coupling and this mass. And this is how you feed the computer. So the observable will depend on G, big M, which is the dimensionless. To feed the computer, you have to give dimensionless quantities. So the dimensionless combination, which is combined with a small m, and then the number of lattice sites. And then you have to define something which should be physically meaningful in the normalization group sense. So you should take simulation along a line of constant physics, because if you change the regulator, the physics should not change. This is a statement of a renormalization, which is done by keeping constant masses. So there is a certain way in which we define the continuum limit. I will say in a second that this is, we are now understanding that we have to correct this way, but for the moment, let me say that for a generic observable, then we have, this is the answer of the lattice, and this is the continuum limit, which is taken very simply by setting the number of lattice sites to infinity. And there are certain finite volume effects which we want to take under control. And so the recipe is just extrapolation of these measurements for number of lattice sites to infinity. So the first measurement is a measurement of the masses, which we extrapolate by the exponential decay of the correlator of some fields, like the X fields. If we were in the continuum, we would take the logarithm to get this m. We are in the discretized setting, we take the logarithmic derivative, and we get something that we can compare. It's not so nice, probably also not so visible. It's something that we were happy about, because we would say there are no infinities occurring, so we do not have to renormalize parameters, so we can keep our continuum limit as it is. And this 1/2, which is the average here, reproduces the perturbative region of the prediction, which was actually calculated here by Benjamin Basseau some years ago, here at perimeter. The second measurement, the most important one, is the derivative of the CASP anomaly, in which we measure the BEV of the string theory action. One thing comes into play is the presence of divergences. However, if you quantify, you can quantify the coefficient of these divergences, and you see that it's all regular. So to say, it's what you expect. It's the number of bosons which appears quadratically in the action from coupling. And it's something that we expect. So it's actually used in lattice studies of gauge theories, supersymmetric. This is one of the parameters. This divergence is one of the parameters. The coefficient of this divergence is one of the parameters that help identifying the correct theory. I should mention that these divergences continue. And again, they are compatible with the fact that we have something which is like the gluon condensate here. So in lattice QCD, when you study the action of Young-Mills, so the trace of F square, what you have to do is with the gluon condensate, which has also a lot of divergences. And in fact, it's not possible to define in a unique way in that context, because there is a mixing of the Lagrangian. So we have the action, but the operator here relevant is the Lagrangian with lower dimensional operators. Here, it's the mixing with identity, which ensures a quadratic divergence. So D is 2 in this case. The dimension of the identity is 0. So we have A to the minus 2, which is this n square here, translating in terms of sites. So there is a quadratic divergence, but we are lucky. We do not have a running coupling. So we can actually identify the coefficients of the divergences at subtracted, and this is the main plot I want to show, which is which the symbols here, the points are the lattice points. This is the dotted lines are the perturbative calculations, and this is the continuum prediction from the exact methods integrability. And here to match, we have to do a certain hypothesis which may be strong, that there is this kind of relation between the coupling in the continuum and the coupling on the lattice. But all in all, this is a positive outcome, because the behavior is respected, and we even see something non-perturbative. That's what I was referring to. So the perturbative thing is not really possible to go in details on the matching, but But we see this bending down. I have some further few comments, which are that the relation between the continuum coupling and the lattice coupling could be non-trivial. Then we should actually plot something different, so the cusp anomaly versus some mass. This is what is also done in lattice QCD, like a so-called cusp anomaly scheme. The next comment I want to make is that a recent simulation are suggesting that we should change the way we take the continuum limit. Basically, we see a divergence in the fermionic correlators, which is, again, very similar to what happens in lattice QCD when you discretize Wilson fermions by breaking the chiral symmetry. So we expect to cure it via an additive renormalization scheme. So we expect to have a fine tuning in the game. Also, there is something that I can probably skip in view of the time, which is technically interesting, but therefore also probably not interesting for the talk. But it's like a way in which we understand, and this I want to emphasize, that the sign problem may be not really a problem for us. Because sometimes you say, OK, you have this strong sign problem. OK, so let's forget about the whole project. But we have indication that this could be not a real problem. This is yes, okay. No, that's true. Let me go to the conclusion. So the conclusions are that, well, what we address is the problem of quantizing at finite coupling, one of the most important models of Stroop and string theory in the context of ADS-CFT. And the idea is that is the one of a particle physicist, if you want. So to solve a non-trivial four-dimensional QFT is hard. So we want to reduce the problem and find a good regulator. And we find a good agreement at imperturbative regime. Some non-perturbative physics we see. There is several subtleties. We hope to give some answers to the subtleties because we got a lot of funding. I got a lot of funding for this project. So in the last, we hope, having two PhD students and even a postdoc for years to answer some of the many questions that we have here. And yeah, I think I want to thank you for your attention and take a last chance to do some advertisement. This is a website for the Gender in High Energy Theory group. I was participating in the first stages of this, but then I decoupled, but they did a beautiful work. This is something which is hosted at CERN. So if you are in the high energy community, this is a way you could manifest, if you want, like Marie said yesterday. It's better not to say the surname because I'm not yet someone. Okay. Mari is beautiful. So she said we could just thick box. So this would be a way, so if you go here, on the members list, you will see a lot of names that probably just wanted to say, yes, I'm here, I'm supportive, so just to appear there. But I think it's a symbol. If you go there and if you join this list, you will receive some information and you will also show some interest. It could be, if you are interested, a good way to show your sensibility to this kind of project, and you can read more. But first, let me thank you for your attention. I killed probably all the questions, but.
So maybe one question because everybody's hungry. So, quick question. Maybe I ask a very, very quick question. So, when you say understanding non-trivial QFT models in 4D, so how far you would actually say that you guys have, you know, real interacting. Non-trivial
four-dimensional
model.
So the point of view of a string theoretician is that we have a model which should describe. It's like n equal 4 super Hamiltons. It should be the same as a string theory on this curve background. So it's a definition of quantum gravity from the point of view of string theory. It's a four-dimensional gauge theory, and so what we do is just to give. So if you want a measure of this. I could tell you that there are.
How rigorous it is done?
It's super rigorous. Not so. This lattice thing is like it's really in a net. You know, it's an initial stage. But the way analytical calculations are done, it's super rigorous, and there is a beautiful example, which is the analytic calculation of this CASP anomaly, which can be done in perturbative gauge theories, using information from string theory, which means using integrability in this context. I could be more specific, but there is no time. It has been possible to reproduce the gauge theory gluon scattering amplitude calculation at 5 loops have reproduced the prediction given from string theory. So you can take the reverse thing. You can say that really string theory furnishes an input to study this gauge theory is highly non-trivial at all values of the coupling. It should be true.
Okay, I have to get this more sure. Okay, so thank you very much for the time. We should definitely.